Israeli forces have agreed to a truce with Hamas that includes allowing humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip.
Officials in Qatar made the ceasefire announcement Thursday as negotiators worked out final details of the deal, which is to lead to the release of dozens of hostages held by militants and Palestinians imprisoned by Israel.
The release of some hostages held by the militant group is also expected as part of the deal.
Yes, women and children. They'll be released in four different groups, 12 or 13 each one, and over the 4 days.
And Western brands are feeling the impact of a boycott campaign in Egypt and Jordan linked to Israel's military offensive in the Gaza Strip. Today is Friday, November 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Kim Lewis. A four-day ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas begins Friday morning, a day later than originally planned. VOA's Rick Pantaleo has more.
Officials in Qatar made the ceasefire announcement Thursday as negotiators worked out final details of the deal, which is to lead to the release of dozens of hostages held by militants and Palestinians imprisoned by Israel. Associated Press correspondent Karen Shamas has this report.
Qatari Foreign Ministry spokesman Majid Al Ansari announced the ceasefire will start at 7 a.m. local time on Friday. He said the two sides had exchanged lists of those to be released, and the first group of 13 women and children held by Hamas would be freed by Friday afternoon. He did not say how many Palestinian prisoners would be freed, but officials have said three would be freed for every hostage. Al Jazeera aired Al Ansari's comments, in which, through a translator, he said he was hopeful the truce would lead to more breakthroughs.
A lot of things have been done and said regarding the release of more than the 50 and to extend as well the truce.
He also added that increased aid for Palestinians will start to enter Gaza as soon as possible. I'm Karen Chamas.
At a news conference broadcast on Al Jazeera, through a translator, Majid Al Ansari, a spokesman for Qatar's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, says the success of the truce has to involve both sides.
The agreement needs an executive plan to be implemented, and as a mediator, we need to guarantee that the captives will arrive safely to the final destination.
The diplomatic breakthrough promised some relief for the 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza who have endured weeks of Israeli bombardment. It also offered hope to families in Israel, fearful for the fate of their loved ones taken captive during Hamas's October 7th attack that triggered the war. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
For more on the truce and the release of 50 Israeli hostages and about 150 Palestinian prisoners, I spoke with Middle East correspondent Linda Gradstein, who was in Jerusalem. Linda, thank you for joining me today. What has been reaction to this hostage agreement?
I think there's kind of mixed feelings. Look, on one hand, the hostages have kind of captured everybody's attention and everybody's hearts in Israel. You know, the thought of these children, little children who've been held in Hamas captivity for almost 7 weeks is sort of almost unbearable. And the fact that 50 of them will be released, I think, you know, gives everybody kind of a ray of hope. At the same time, you know, there's concern about what the price is for that hostage release and whether Israel will be able to, as it says, go back to fighting Hamas when the ceasefire is over.
And also, once the hostages are released, can you tell us what the process is when they're released?
Yes, women and children. They'll be released in four different groups, 12 or 13 each one, and over the 4 days. And they'll be given to the Red Cross. Hamas will give them to the Red Cross. And the Red Cross will probably take them to the Israeli border and hand them to Israeli soldiers. They will then be taken to medical facilities in Israel that are prepared to receive them, where their families will be waiting for them. There's special teams of doctors and trauma specialists and all kinds of things. And they're going to be kept away from the public. Israel doesn't want a repeat of what happened when one of the elderly hostages was released and said she was well treated and that her captors were nice to her. So for as journalists, it's going to be not very easy to get to the hostages. They will have medical checks, and then you know, if they're not young children, at some in the next few days, they'll have a debriefing with, you know, Israeli officials and also hopefully to provide intelligence about where the other hostages might be being held.
And also, you brought up a really good point about how the hostages are being treated while in captivity. Some analysts say that hostages may be told by Hamas to tell the world how good they were treated. And the hostages may do this, given they may still have family being held in captivity by Hamas and may be fearful of what would happen to them. So this is a possibility that this could happen.
Right. There is a possibility that that will happen. And of course, we know that when Hamas came into Israel and killed 1,200 people and their apparently rape and all kinds of other things, that said, they were apparently handed over to other Hamas gunmen. There's a special unit in Hamas that deals with hostages. It's possible that they were not maltreated or attacked or tortured. They certainly were while they were captured, but once they were there. But I do agree with you. You know, there's also whole families were captured. And since only women and children are being released, at least at this time, it's going to be very hard. I was even thinking there's a 3.5-year-old girl who was captured by herself. Her entire family was killed by Hamas. And, you know, somebody's been taking care of her and she's become attached to somebody. And what if that person is not released in this hostage release? Then this poor little girl, her name is Avigail, is going to be, you know, going through separation anxiety yet again. So it's just really hard to fathom. At the same time, for the families who have been waiting and waiting, it's going to be a very special day. And of course, they're obviously very concerned, and I'm sure they're concerned about long-time trauma and all kinds of other things.
That was VOA Middle East correspondent Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. Western brands are feeling the impact of a boycott campaign in Egypt and Jordan linked to Israel's military offensive in the Gaza Strip. Reuters' Angela Johnston reports.
This McDonald's in Giza, Egypt, has seen few customers in recent weeks. When Reuters visited in early November, the inside appeared empty. That's because the fast food restaurant has been hit by a boycott over Israel's military offensive in Gaza since the Hamas attack on October 7th. The campaign has targeted Western brands in Arab countries over perceptions about pro-Israeli stances and financial ties. A sign in the window saying the franchise operator and its staff support Palestinians has done little to change those perceptions. Here's Ahmed Azat, who lives in Cairo.
It is fundamental for us as people supporting our Palestinian brothers to at the very least stop buying the products that help the Zionist entity kill our Palestinian brothers in Gaza.
McDonald's has said it's dismayed by disinformation about its position on the conflict. Its Egyptian franchise has pledged $650,000 in aid to Gaza. An employee at the corporate offices of McDonald's in Egypt said sales at this franchise fell by at least 70% in October and November compared to the same months last year. Starbucks has also been targeted in the boycott campaign, despite the coffee giant saying it's a non-political organization. An Egyptian supplier to Starbucks and McDonald's says he's noticed client demand has slowed down by about 50%. Even smaller businesses are feeling the pinch too. Kiosk owner Issam Abu Shalabi says customers are demanding Egyptian soft drinks instead of products from Israel or the U.S. I see it as very wrong, he says. What does it mean to drink something or not drink it? Shalabi says if people really want to support Palestinians, they should fight alongside them. But Hassan Mahmoud, with Egypt's boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, says the campaign lets people feel like they're making an impact and hitting companies where it hurts. This Cairo supermarket says it's had an uptick in sales because it replaced boycotted products with local ones. In Jordan, this grocery store has signs warning customers if a product is being boycotted. This customer says that if a boycotted item is picked up by mistake, she would return it immediately. Still, some remain skeptical about the effectiveness of boycotts. take-up has also been uneven, with no major impact seen in some countries, including Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Tunisia.
That was Reuters reporter Angela Johnston. The rescue of 41 workers trapped for nearly 2 weeks in a collapsed tunnel in India is in the final stretch of digging, AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
After nearly 2 weeks of digging and delays, the rescue of 41 construction workers trapped in a collapsed highway tunnel in northern India is expected to be completed soon. The drilling of the final stretch resumed following a six-hour delay after blades on the drilling machine were damaged by a metal object in the debris. Atul Karwal, the head of the National Disaster Response Force, told reporters they hope to get the workers out by nighttime.
But if some other impediment comes, then we are there to handle it because we don't know what it'll throw us in our path again.
The metal pipes obstructing the drilling were finally removed, according to another official. I'm Karen Chamas.
Dutch voters sent political shockwaves across Europe when the right-wing anti-Islam Freedom Party, led by Geert Wilders, won the highest number of seats in Wednesday's snap election. But as Henry Ridgewell reports, Wilders could find it hard to form a government.
Geert Wilders has long been a provocative figure in Dutch politics, but never before has he enjoyed this level of success, with his party winning 37 of the 150 seats in parliament.
And the hope
is that the people get their country back, that we make sure that the Netherlands is for the Dutch again, that we will limit the asylum tsunami and migration.
Wilders' party manifesto promises less Islam in the Netherlands. In 2016, he was found guilty of criminally insulting an ethnic group and inciting hatred and discrimination after leading a crowd chanting for fewer Moroccans in the country. Minority groups have voiced concern at Wednesday's election results. But following his victory, Wilders toned down the anti-Islam rhetoric.
If I become prime minister, I will be that for all Dutch people, regardless of who they are, their gender or religion, where they come from, for everyone.
That civilized tone won him voters during the campaign, says political analyst Rashid Azrout.
Basically what he said is, my hatred for Islam, that will still be a part of me, but it will put it aside. That doesn't need to be part of the government. So that way I can become a more viable coalition partner.
Wilders' dyed blonde hair and conservative agenda have drawn comparisons with former US President Donald Trump. His program pledges Netherlands first, echoing the slogans of other populist parties.
This is the international trend, a huge anti-establishment populist revolt all over the place, all over the world.
But any coalition agreement will likely soften his stance, says Azrout.
Yes, Geert Wilders and his party, they say we should have an exit so that the Netherlands should leave the European Union, we should have the guilder back instead of the euro, and not support the Ukraine. But he realizes, of course, that he is alone in that sense.
Wilders' Freedom Party is still 39 seats short of a majority, and it's not clear if Wilders will find other parties willing to work with him. Negotiations could take several months. Far-right leaders across Europe sent Wilders their congratulations. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban said the winds of change had arrived, while France's Marine Le Pen said it was a spectacular performance. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
Dutch Muslims expressed shock on Thursday at the election win of far-right populist Geert Wilders, who has previously called for mosques and the Quran to be banned in the Netherlands. VOA's Rick Pantaleo has more.
Dutch Muslims expressed shock on Thursday at the election of a far-right populist, Geert Wilders, who has previously called for mosques and the Quran to be banned in the Netherlands. Abdesemed Tahiri, a community worker in the Hague's Schilderswijk neighborhood and left-wing PVDA party supporter, is among the Dutch Muslims who were stunned by election results.
Gisteravond was enerzijds een schok.
Last night was a shock, I thought. What is going on? On the other hand, we've had this before with Lesch de Pimvorten and the fewer speech by Geert Wilders, but also his call to have less headscarves, close the mosques, and burn Qurans. It's yet another hit, and I thought, that's intense. It really was a blow I had to process. That was Abdessamed Tahiri, a community worker in The Hague's Schilderswijk neighborhood and left-wing PVDA party supporter. Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Right-wing populist Javier Milei has been president-elect just 4 days, and already Argentina's unions and social organizations are vowing pushback and even protest if he makes good on his promises to slash the size of the state and privatize companies. Hundreds of supporters from Georgia's main opposition party gathered in the capital, Tbilisi, Thursday, demanding their ex-leader's release from prison on the 20th anniversary of the country's pro-democracy revolution. Mikhail Saakashvili spearheaded the Bloodless Rose Revolution in 2003 and led the Black Sea Nation for 9 years before going into exile. A U.S. official said U.S. forces were attacked 4 times in Iraq and Syria on Thursday with rockets and armed drones, but there were no casualties or damage to infrastructure. Speaking on condition of anonymity, the official said U.S. and international forces were attacked at 2 sites in northeastern Syria with multiple rockets and a one-way attack drone. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Kim Lewis. Violent clashes break out in Dublin after a knife attack that injured 3 children, 1 seriously. VOA's Rick Pantaleo has more.
Violent clashes have broken out in central Dublin after a 5-year-old girl was seriously injured in a knife attack Thursday that also sent a woman and 2 other young children to the hospital. This is Irish National Police spokesman Liam Garrity.
One girl aged 5 years has sustained serious injuries and is currently receiving emergency medical treatment in CHI Temple Street. One boy aged 5 years and a girl aged 6 years who received less serious injuries were brought to CHI Crumlin for treatment.
That was Irish National Police spokesman Liam Garrity. Soon after the attack, at least 100 people took to the streets, some armed with metal bars and covering their faces. Police said over 400 officers, including many in riot gear, were deployed in Dublin city center to contain the unrest. Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
North Korea said on Thursday it would deploy stronger armed forces and new weapons on its border with the South, a day after Seoul suspended part of a 2018 inter-Korean military accord in protest over Pyongyang's launch of a spy satellite, Reuters' Gabe Singer reports.
North Korea said on Thursday it would scrap a military deal with the South and deploy more troops along their shared border. That's after Seoul suspended part of a 2018 pact with the North a day earlier, in protest over Pyongyang's launch of a spy satellite earlier this week. North Korea's defense ministry said in a statement, quote, "From now on, our army will never be bound by the September 19th North-South military agreement," end quote. "We will withdraw the military steps taken to prevent military tension and conflict in all spheres, including ground, sea, and air, and deploy more powerful armed forces and new type military hardware in the region along the military demarcation line." The statement came hours after Pyongyang fired a ballistic missile toward the sea on Wednesday. South Korea said that launch appeared to have failed. Tuesday's satellite launch was North Korea's 3rd attempt this year, after 2 failures. It came after North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, made a rare trip to Russia, during which Russian President Vladimir Putin vowed deeper cooperation, including helping Pyongyang build satellites. Seoul says it's likely Russia helped in technical aspects of the launch, which drew condemnation worldwide for flouting UN resolutions that bar Pyongyang from tech that could be used in ballistic missile programs. Seoul believes the satellite has entered orbit, but said it needs more time to work out if it was functional. In response to the launch, South Korean Prime Minister Hang Duck-soo announced partially suspending the 919 agreement, an inter-Korean military pact signed in 2018, until, quote, "mutual trust is restored between the two Koreas." One of the concrete steps is immediately resuming military observation of the North's forces in border areas. The U.S. says Seoul's suspension of the deal was a, quote, "prudent and restrained response," citing Pyongyang's, quote, "failure to adhere to the agreement."
That was Reuters' Gabe Singer. The Supreme Court is set to hear arguments the first week of December in a challenge of the Purdue opioid settlement, AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
A multi-billion dollar agreement reached to settle thousands of lawsuits with the maker of OxyContin is headed to the Supreme Court on December 4th. The Justice Department agreement met resistance from their bankruptcy integrity arm and has been criticized by Attorney General Merrick Garland. At issue is whether the legal shield that bankruptcy provides can be extended to people such as the Sacklers, who have not declared bankruptcy themselves. Victims that lost loved ones are divided, some saying the agreement is a chance to move on. The wealthy Connecticut family behind Purdue Pharma would give up ownership and contribute $6 billion towards the fight against the opioid epidemic. Other victims say money won't bring closure, and they're unhappy the Sackler family will keep billions in profits and be protected from civil lawsuits. Jennifer King, Washington.
New York City hosted its 97th Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, featuring 48 character and novelty balloons, 26 floats, 12 marching bands, and more than 700 clowns. Aaron Rainin has the story from New York.
Thanksgiving Day Macy's Parade is held in New York City and begins the countdown to Christmas. The parade traces its roots back to 1924, when many Macy's employees were first-generation Americans who wanted to create a winter parade like they experienced in Europe.
This is my first time doing the parade, and I'm so excited, having a great time. Energy's amazing, crowd's amazing.
The first televised parade took place in 1946 and was limited to the New York area. Last year, over 27 million people viewed the parade on video and television. And this year's parade is also believed to have generated massive viewership numbers on multiple platforms. Aaron Rainin, VOA News, New York City.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Kim Lewis.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joe Biden signed the first ever presidential memorandum outlining the United States' commitment to worker rights globally. Unfortunately, there are still far too many places where workers do not have a seat at the bargaining table, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Even worse, places where working people are denied a decent living, subjected to harassment and abuse, harmed, even killed, for simply standing up for their rights. Service workers in Cambodia, agricultural leaders in Guatemala, labor lawyers in Eswatini, countless brave individuals fighting for the right to organize, to work under safe and healthy conditions, to be free from forced labor, trafficking, discrimination.
Many unions around the world improve working conditions for their members. They raise wages for employees, reduce gender and racial pay gaps, increase productivity, and help strengthen democracies. For all these reasons, the United States will continue to make advocating for the rights of workers and raising labor standards a central part of our diplomacy, said Secretary Blinken.
First, we will engage governments, workers, labor organizations, trade unions, civil society, and the private sector around the world to protect and promote respect for internationally recognized labor rights.
Second, we will work to hold accountable those who threaten, who intimidate, who attack union leaders, labor rights defenders, and labor organizations, warned Secretary Blinken.
We want to be there for people like Kalpona Atker, a Bangladeshi garment worker, an activist, who says that she is alive today because the U.S. Embassy advocated on her behalf. When we use our voice, we use our advocacy around the world, we can make a concrete difference in making sure that those who are trying to advance labor rights are protected and defended.
Third, the U.S. will strengthen the federal government's capacity to advance worker rights abroad, and the U.S. will work with governments and multilateral institutions like the United Nations and the G20 to promote labor rights and standards. Finally, the U.S. will step up its enforcement to ensure that its trade agreements and supply chains protect workers and that it is not importing goods made with forced labor. These steps will help preserve and expand civic space and ensure workers' voices are heard in the United States and around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.